Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves, away from the guilty.
We want to bring in Mark Walsh, who's a freelancer for Fox. You live just a few blocks away and witness.
Dude, I live on the 43rd floor of a building, which is five blocks from the World Trade Center itself. I witnessed the entire thing from beginning to end.
People talk about how it looked like a movie. I know when I came walking down here early this morning and saw both towers on fire and people on every street corner, it was like a movie, but you watched the planes hit the towers.
I was watching with my roommate. It was approximately several minutes after the first plane had hit. I saw this plane come out of nowhere and just ream right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side. And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
Okay, so it is the 10th of June 2018. This is Members Club call number 22, and today we're talking about fakeologist.com, and we've been graced with the presence of none other than Tim, who also goes by the name Aberato. He is the chief of Fakeologist, and we'll be speaking to him in just a moment. But before we do, let's introduce the other panelists for today. We've got with us Mezzi from Victoria, Australia, making her 18th appearance on the Member Skype Call series. Mezzi, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, John. Hello, everyone.
And we've also got with us Waterman Chris from Florida in the US. Chris, how are you?
Excellent. How's everybody?
I am terrific. It's good to have you on board. And we've got with us Tim from Fakeologist.com. Tim, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome, John.
And we
good day to Mezzi, good day to Waterman. Chris.
Excellent. Well, we were discussing a few things before we hit record. What we're hoping to discuss today with you, Tim, is your website and how you got into what it is that you're doing online, and a few questions related to some of the things that have been happening on your website recently. Now, most of the audience of this website will be familiar with your work, but can you give us an introduction into what it is that you do? Suppose someone had never heard of your website and they wanted to know, what are you doing with fakeologist.com? What's the purpose? What's the aim? What would you say to them?
Well, I have been studying the media for 30 or 40 years, which means I'm at least 30 or 40 years old. And I have been fascinated just with current events. It's just a hobby. It's something that never stops entertaining or keeping my interest. I've been interested in politics. I've been interested in computers. I've been interested in the blend of all those things. And about 6 years ago, in 2012, I was doing some research on a fairly annoying tax situation that occurred with Americans and Canadians. And it got big press here in Toronto and Canada. I'm based in Toronto, Canada, which is the media capital of Canada. It's not the actual capital of Canada, but it is the media capital. And in researching the tax situation, I got into the IRS information because it was an IRS issue at the time, and it became very big for a couple months in Canada. And for some reason, researching the IRS brought me to websites that I suppose were intertwined with 9/11. And like most people, after it would have been 11 years at that point, it occurred to me that the 9/11 problem hadn't really been solved. Now, I was never a conspiracy-minded person, other than being interested in the topic, but I never researched the topic in any meaningful way. I did buy a couple of JFK books because I thought, oh, finally the book that tells everything what happened, and maybe this will solve the case. And I did see the JFK movie, and it didn't really occur to me that at the end of the movie, we still hadn't solved the problem. that we still didn't know who'd done it. But I never pushed it any farther than that. For some reason, it never occurred to me that it was a big enough issue to pursue. But getting back to 9/11, this is at a time when I've always watched documentaries. I've always been a huge documentary fan. I've never been a mainstream shoot-'em-up movie person. I've always preferred just people-oriented documentaries. And I bumped into a documentary, I believe it was called Loose Change, or the other one that began the whole thing for me was A Plain Truth. And I watched them, and I was fascinated that there was an alternate story about 9/11. And it really stunned me that there was a pretty good, plausible explanation, an alternative to the mainstream story. And I thought, after watching the first one, that it solved everything. And then, of course, I went on to the second one and the third one and the fourth one. And every single time I watched the documentary, I thought, okay, this is the solution. And I noticed a pattern. Every single time I'm watching a movie, they have the solution. I keep agreeing with the latest version of whatever the movie is saying. So I thought, wait a minute, this is pretty strange that, okay, what movie am I going to stop on to actually form and base my official personal version of 9/11? And it was quite a rabbit trail. And after watching the movies, I went to websites to try and explain the movies to see if anyone else was talking about them. And then that got me on a version looking at podcasts. And I thought, wow, this is really the power of the internet. I'm finally getting a really great view of what otherwise is an ignored topic. Yeah, 9/11 is an ignored topic in the mainstream media. So then I found a homemade radio station that I decided, well, maybe I'll do a little talk, because I just was more tickled with the technology. I wanted to see if you could actually have a radio station on the internet, and didn't really need any experience, so I tried that. And that attracted a bunch of people that were already there, and then it sort of created a community. So then I transformed my political blog, which has since retired, and I just started, since this was my new interest, blogging about 9/11 and all the topics related to it. And it's still, to this day, my main personal blog, where I'm just looking for deception and fakery and posting on it. And whoever wants to read it or participate or comment can also do so. And then I got into expanding the audio portion and dabbled a bit in the YouTube and just started a bit of a community using all the software tools that are mainly free and available to everybody. And really, 6 years later, it hasn't really changed a whole lot. My focus has not changed a whole lot. And it's still really a hobby. But I'm learning a lot about just human psychology, maybe more so than the ins and outs of every single conspiracy type event. And the more I learn, and I think, John, you are also learning a lot about human psychology, the more I realize that not much is going to change. And the people that are interested enough in controlling other people, they are aware of this. They are aware of the absolute non-participation by most people, and therefore no one is ever going to be a real threat to them, because they know human nature, and human nature will probably never change. And the fact that they know all that is the key to their success. And makes me less agitated to try and make any changes. I can continue to do my research without too much feeling of personal threat, and I can attract some people who are interested in talking about it, but really nothing is going to change, just the way I approach all this information. That's the only thing that I've changed in the last 6 years. So there's no real tension. I don't really have any great worries or fears, and other than just aging in general and health. Those are the two things that most people that are in the second half of their life should really worry about. Other than that, that's how the site has evolved to this day, and I'm pretty happy with it. And I'm happy to talk to people like you and like-minded others that are attracted to it. But other than that, it's been a pretty interesting ride.
Well, that is a lovely introduction. Thank you for that. My hope today, Tim, is to talk about Media Fakery and your recent, I guess, divergence into what you call EGI, this transvestigation that many people in the alternative realm are so interested in, and a few other things as well. So we'll get some questions from Mez and from Waterman Chris, and also some questions that were left on the warm-up thread for this call on johnlebon.com. But first of all, let me throw to you what I would say is an overview of your website. If somebody asked me, JLB, why do you promote fakeologist.com? What is this website to you? How would you describe it? If I had to summarize your website, I'll give you that summary now. And you tell me, Tim, if you think it's a fair summary. It is a multimedia blog which uses posts, written posts, and the audio chat function where anyone can discuss these kinds of topics online on the Discord server. And those discussions are then reposted as MP3 files for anybody to listen to. And the focus of the website is usually on media fakery, that is, major media events that might not be the way that they're represented in the media. And recently it seems like most of the activity on your website is actually taking place on the Discord server in the chat function. So people are logging into the server and having text-based discussions on these kinds of topics. And it's a blog, but it's developed a little bit of a community sense. There are regular people there who've been there for years. Some of your more regular participants, like Rollo, who is another Australian, he's been there for years. And it's not a community, but it does have that kind of feeling. There are some regular participants, and you guys more or less know each other beyond media fakery. Would you say that's a fair description, a fair quick synopsis of fakeologist.com as a platform?
Yeah, that's pretty good. The chat function on the Discord is more just of a coffee house type of conversation. It's nothing that really gets recorded. There's nothing terribly worthwhile to archive from that. I used to archive all the chats in the past, but it just became too much, and there's just no way that anyone probably in the future would ever go through it in any way. So that's more of an idle conversation part. I try and encourage anyone who has something that's worth saving to log into the Fakeologist blog WordPress software and type in a comment that is actually saved, which requires a little bit more thought than just a thumbs up or a how you doing type comment in the Discord. So I don't really like to push the Discord chat too much. The audio function is what I was most interested in because it's more easy than most software to log in and get your microphone working and your voice recorded. That's the only reason really that I'm using the Discord server, because it seems to be the easiest software. And just like Facebook and YouTube, we just find that most people have no interest in pursuing the technology aspect of computers. They really just want to slide the glove on and start using it. And YouTube and Facebook and Google have been the best at getting people into the computer realm without knowing what they're doing. And that's why they're successful. And therefore, that they own their own platforms for that reason, so they can tweak them and get people on their platform and using them. But it takes a little more skill to come onto my website, a little more effort to make an ID and or get on the Discord server and start chatting. Well, that's really the difference, really, between mine and, say, what most people today think is the internet, which is YouTube and Facebook and Instagram. That's what most people today actually think the internet is. They don't even know the backbone or the basis or the history of the internet. It's just, and more proof that history is really only goes back about 2 weeks for most people.
Okay, so you got into all of this about 6 years ago, and one of the first people who you were discussing some of these topics with was a guy who ran a website called Truth in 7 Minutes, a character named Marcus Allen. And in my opinion, this is just my opinion, it's sad that he's no longer putting out podcasts, because he was talking about things like what I call the war hoax. He was talking about that years ago, and there's very few people on the scene today who were talking about things like the war hoax. And so I went back and listened to a few of your earlier interviews with Marcus not long ago, and it strikes me that you were pretty much across media fakery right from the start. Like, you seem to have hit the ground running and had a good understanding of just how fake these media stories can be. What was it? What were the main things that led you to realize just how fake the media is? And for context, I should say, when I first got into this, I didn't understand how fake the media was until I found Fakeologist.com. And so, say with that MH370 flight that was supposedly when it just disappeared. Remember that one?
Yeah, there were two MHs.
Yeah, there was the
MHs. Two MHs. Yeah.
Yeah, and so there was one of these planes was supposedly shot down by these Russian separatists, you know, in the Ukraine or
that
whatever.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. And so before I found Fakeologist.com, I was still one of those Zero Hedge style, it wasn't really the separatists who shot it down, it was the American government trying to frame the Russians or something like this, right? And it was your website where people were discussing this idea of, well, maybe it's not what the TV is saying, but maybe it's also not what the conspiracy theorists are saying. Maybe there was no plane. Maybe the whole story was fake. That was what got my mind thinking, oh, yeah, I have to reconsider my whole opinion of this topic. I can't just assume that the alternative story is true. Maybe none of these stories are true. Whereas it seems like in your case, Ab, you pretty much from the time you got into this scene, you knew not to take any of the news seriously. So I'm wondering, what was it that got you realizing that all of the media could be fake?
Well, the main one was the movie called September Clues by Simon Shack. That was one of the YouTube videos that I stumbled upon in the first month of the research. And there's no real narrative at all in the September Clues movie, which, by the way, I've reposted on what I call FakeTube, which is my own video server, just in case it disappears from the other standardized mainstream video sources. But when I watched that movie, and actually I watched another movie before that called The Great American Psy Opera, which, again, as I told you, I thought that was the penultimate explanation for 9/11. Once I watched the sixth or seventh chapter of that movie, I can't remember how many chapters, I thought, yeah, that is it. That's it. Finally. Why isn't this mainstream? Why isn't everyone talking about this? I called at least five people and said, listen, you got to watch this movie. And then I quickly got on to September Clues, because once I got rolling down this hill, I just wanted to get to the bottom of it. So I just kept going and going and going until the end, really, of what I think is the ultimate rabbit trail. And then I got on to a forum called Clues Forum, which offered some discussion about the movie September Clues. And at that point, when I read some very intelligent posts, I thought, okay, this must be the end of the line explaining 9/11. And then it occurred to me, what I just realized in the explanation of these movies is that the entire world can be fooled on a giant lie. And that is an amazing revelation. How can everyone that matters in the world, and by matters I mean that controls the basic information that we all consume, not me or not another guy down the road or another guy in another state, but how can almost everyone in the world be fooled? And I thought, that is a fascinating problem for some people, but a fascinating advantage for the other people. And that just blew my mind. So I just started going through the list of all the things that scared me and made me fearful. And I thought, well, okay, if we're going to use this as a template, what other massive lie could be going on right now that is being used to scare and control people? And you just go through the list. Take any topic and put it into the great search engine. And after the word, put the word hoax after it and see what pops up. And that's what I did. I was just blown away by what could be faked in the world. So then I thought, well, what the heck is true then? What is there any element of any major story that's true? And that's plane crashes or bombs or big war events. Anything is up in the air now in my mind. And I'm not saying they're completely without any kernel of truth, but being someone who likes to know how the magician trick works, I just wanted to know some of the mechanics. What are some of the elements that you need to create that are real to make an event fake? Because a magician is a real person that has real props. These are the real parts of it. But how does he use these real things to create this illusion? And even if I'm explained the trick, I find that the next day I can't even remember what I just learned. And that's what keeps the illusion going. I literally have to go back and say, okay, I don't even remember now what I just learned. How did they do this trick? And therefore, that's been the endless pursuit. So now every single highly promoted media story to me is by default fake or staged or just orchestrated by a very intelligent bunch that probably doesn't change from government to government or country to country. They're just a very specialized business. And therefore, all the things that I found in 9/11, I look for similar things in the story of the day. And if I see any of the same components, then I automatically just say, well, clearly they use the same components that work on people, the same elements, and there's no need to change them because they are tried and true and they're tested and they work. And no one except a few very intelligent people like you and I are able to or care enough to understand what we're watching.
All right. Well, sorry to interrupt you there. Two more questions for me, and then we'll go to Chris and then to Mezzi. So what you're saying, Tim, is that you were a regular person, just working a regular job, and you had these problems with your tax return or something like this, and before you knew it, you'd tumble down the rabbit hole, and within a couple of months, you'd gone from a regular person with regular beliefs into a complete understanding or a very comprehensive understanding of media fakery. In the space of just a month or two, was that how rapid the process was?
Oh, yeah. I would say that I don't think it should take anyone more than a few weeks to just get right to the bottom of it. There aren't that many places or resources to explore. The internet is mostly fluff, but there are a few pretty good places to get the information from. So it should not take anyone that long. Now, I don't think I'm the most intelligent person in the world. I think I'm a fast enough learner when it comes to pretty basic topics. And I think most people should be able to duplicate what I have done. Now, what holds them back, I don't know. But even to this day, I can't believe there aren't 10 John LeBons and 10 fakeologists and 10 Marcus Allens. It doesn't really make any sense to me why there isn't a few extra people talking like this. And I would love to hear many more voices just saying the same thing. If I just heard what I'm saying now from somebody else who actually believes it, I would be very pleased. And I would listen to that person. But for some reason, there just are not, 6 years later, many people. And I would welcome older people, younger people. Younger especially would be even more refreshing if they're interested. because that would give me hope that with their networking skills, younger people, then it might begin to break apart this media lock the controllers, the foolers have on the rest of us. And then they would have to get a new bag of tricks. But that just has not been the case. And I don't know really why or what can change that.
So for me, it was about 2013. I learned about Sandy Hook and the Boston bombings. And then it wasn't until maybe another year later, maybe 18 months later, before the depths of media fakery became apparent to me. So there was a space of, whether it was a year or 18 months, that I had to get my mind around this idea of the media. It's not just one lie or two lies. The ability for this thing that we call the mainstream media, to deceive is all-encompassing. Whereas in your case, Ab, you're saying that you discovered all of this in the space of a month or two. How did that affect the rest of your life, to go from a regular person to suddenly understanding that they'll even lie about death, they'll lie about how many people are dying, they can lie about an entire plane going disappearing and get away with it. How did that affect your life to have such a sudden realization in such a short space of time?
Well, it was a real sense of relief that really the government is not trying to kill me. Really, people aren't dying in the way we're told. Really, we don't have any weapons that can split the earth into two. Armageddon is not around the corner. It probably never will be around the corner. It really relaxed me. But people were concerned around me because I did attempt to talk to the people closest to me, because who do we share good news with? Who else is interested in our musings and our personal revelations? And when I did that, I got quite a strong rebuke, and I was quite taken aback by it, and then that was replaced by concern for my mental health. So I thought, this is interesting. Maybe this is a clue as to why this information is not going to spread like wildfire, or hasn't already. So now we have this quandary where we have this great relief. We want to tell everyone about it to stop worrying, but we don't even get outside our immediate circle with this information, because we are looked at with a lot of almost disdain, concern, and I get it to this day. And that causes self-censorship, and then that limits the conversation that I will have even to this day to the weather, just basic things that almost everyone can agree on. We know we are told we should not discuss religion or politics. I think that is something many advise us not to do as we go talk to people we don't really aren't too familiar with, or even people we are familiar with. That's an old thing that we're told. But there's this new element of things we can't talk about, and that's the major news of the day, which, of course, is what most people like to talk about, besides the weather, besides the latest sports scores. So it really is a very limiting revelation that we've got on our hands here. So it is somewhat socially stifling. So you really are limited in telling too many people, and you almost have to just poke at certain people that maybe you don't know too well and see if there's any sunshine into their way of looking at things. And if you see only darkness, then it's best just to self-censor and keep quiet. And then you see perfectly why this information does not spread like wildfire, because people self-censor themselves on some of the mildest things that we can discuss in this world.
Well, this is forget what I see about, as one of the major benefits of your platform is you've got this Discord server. You encourage people to come along and have a chat. And I think a lot of people, when they start to learn about these deceptions, they make the mistake that we've all made to some extent, I think, but some people probably worse than others, of thinking, oh, now I have to go and tell my family or my friends or my colleagues about these things, when in many cases that could be the worst thing you could possibly do. So by having an outlet where you can discuss these things with people from around the world, you can get these ideas off your chest and you can share your opinions and collaborate with people and maybe have that, I don't want to say social aspect, but this natural tendency that we have to want to discuss things with people. When it comes to media fakery, or what some people call conspiracies, by having this online outlet that you provide with your website, I think it can allow people to get that out of their system without having to potentially alienate themselves from their friends and family by going and discussing these topics with those people in their so-called real life. Do you get what I'm trying to say with that? It's almost like by having fakeologists and by having your Discord server, I mean, I'm just speaking from my experience, but for the last couple of years, if I've wanted to discuss something, for instance, V2 rockets, I personally believe V2 rockets, it's not just that they're fake, they're comically fake. And if you look at the photos of V2 rockets from what we call World War II, to me, it's not a matter of, oh, well, maybe they're real or maybe they're fake. Just look at them. These are clown rockets, okay? It's a joke. Sure. Now, had I gone to discuss this with people in my real life, I could have jeopardized relationships with friends or family. Maybe not to the point of losing those relationships, but a regular person would think what I just said about V2 rockets is crazy. And so they would see me differently in all other aspects of the relationship. However, by having a fakeologist to discuss these things, I could say, guys, I just borrowed this book from the Queensland State Library. Let me tell you what it says about V2 rockets, you see? And I remember doing this on a fakeologist chat in 2016. So we're going back more than 2 years now, probably. And what I'm trying to say is that by having this outlet, I feel like it's been beneficial for me, or it was beneficial in the past, because these things that I wanted to discuss, I didn't have to discuss them with real-life people. I could discuss them with people who were at least open to listening, and that was an outlet that was useful for me. Would you say, Ab, that is one of the goals of your Discord server? I mean, what is it that you're trying to do with these Discord chats? What is your central purpose with doing this kind of stuff?
Well, it was really to create audio that I could listen to that's centered around media fakery. There is no other podcast that I know of that discusses and tries to stay focused on this. And this is what I'm most interested in, gathering people like myself, like yourself, that just don't mind talking about it. We don't have to get deep into every aspect of it, but it's just general conversation. Okay, well, this is the latest one. Let's just have a discussion. Let's discuss also how this impacts your normal life. Let's just confirm with each other that we're not crazy. We're not seeing things. We're not delusional. We have seen things that we think are correct. We think we have the secret formula of the media, and we just need confirmation. And that's really what I just wanted to get as many people as I could. And they don't have to stay and probably shouldn't stay. They just come by, take a peek into the fakeologist house, have a discussion. Yes, it's okay what you're thinking. You're not crazy. This is, you should trust your instincts, because they are certainly more trustworthy than what you're being told not to trust your senses. And we all have been there, and we can just offer a little bit of advice, a little bit of comfort when you come by the fakeologist roadhouse. If you just treat it as a highway stop that you can drive by and pop into whenever you're by, that's good enough for me. There's no, you don't have to be here. You don't have to be a monthly performer. But it's just really to confirm what your senses are telling you, but the media is telling you is the opposite. It's a huge conflict mentally for people. But if there is at least a beacon of information on this huge internet, which is really hard to find stuff, if you are lucky enough to fall onto the website or search onto it from whatever pathway you've taken, then be comforted in the fact that there are others that have been there long before. And just like Marcus Allen was there on this whole exploration of 9/11 years before I was. And he was actually tired of talking about it. That's all I wanted to do at the time is talk about it because I just learned about it. But he had learned about it years before. So he actually wanted to talk about something else at the time because, yeah, he'd been there, done that. I understand that now. And I think most people think that are on the fake call just say, okay, we've already solved 9/11. What's next to talk about? Well, whatever you want to talk about that's at least related to it, because people come here for that information. They don't come to my website necessarily for the latest health news. So let's just keep it somewhat concentrated. So all those newcomers, and there's got to be newcomers, every single week people are probably triggered by something they see, like you were triggered with the MH370. So you were finally triggered. You finally convinced yourself, nothing I did really, but you convinced yourself that, okay, there's a place where that information has already been pretty much cleared, and therefore I can go there without being mocked or ridiculed, and maybe we can just see exactly how deep it goes and see who else has already figured this out so I don't have to reinvent the wheel. So, yeah, that's really what the focus of the site has been. It really hasn't changed. It goes hot and it goes cold as people come and go, because crowds in any situation, they gather and then they disperse. And this happens in every interest in life. Musical acts, movies, they rise up, they crescendo, and then they peter out. So if anyone thinks, well, your site was so hot last month and now it's dead. Yeah, that's how everything in life is. Think about it. There are very few constants in your life that maintain the same level. Very few. And if they all were at performing at high levels, you'd blow up. We can't take that. So, yeah, things go up and down. And my interest goes up and down. That's why sometimes I have to retreat to mainstream media and I usually go backwards in history because I like to hear things that I didn't hear before, because now I'm listening for different things.
But time is getting away from us, and I want to go to both Chris and Mezzi to give them a chance to ask you some questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
One final one from me. If you could summarize your opinion of what 9/11 was in just 1 or 2 minutes, if you were speaking to somebody who was open-minded, they weren't there to attack you, they were just genuinely curious, what is your opinion of the 9/11 event? If you could give us a basic overview of your opinion of what that event was and what happened, what would it be? And then once you've given your response to that, we'll go to Chris and then to Mezzi to ask you some questions as well.
Well, thank you. All these main topics can be found on fakeologist.com. Go to the top of the webpage. There are some permanent pages like you've got on your site that list some of my firmest, most permanent beliefs. That's where they are. But 9/11, and I've said it many times on my past broadcasts, is what I believe is the biggest military media hoax of our time, of our generation. And very few things were concrete and steel in this particular event. The only thing I can say for sure, and I had a family member go to New York a week later, two buildings were there. One day and the next day, they were gone. That is a fact. That is a physical reality. But the whole story, as you saw on television, was a media creation. In other words, it was a pre-recorded, made-for-television movie. So everything was done from the actors, from the people on the street, from the news anchors. They were all put there, whether they were in on the whole thing or only in on part of their part of it, but they were there as a simulated reality. In other words, it said it was live, but it was pre-recorded just like any other movie. And all the laws that were created after that were the real part of it. So real laws were created by a simulated story to explain why two towers were demolished in the traditional sense of any other high-rise or low-rise tower in the world. And it's as simple as that. And the good news with 9/11 is they used all the deceptive techniques that are used in propaganda to simulate the deaths. That's the other very important aspect. So 3,000 people were not killed by Muslim terrorists, and they were not killed by George Bush and his gang. They were just disappeared through at least 11 different, very intricate techniques to make or simulate people being here one day and not being here another. And it was a grand mix done by the smartest deception operations in the world, whether they be intelligence, whether they be the military, whatever organizations don't change year to year, government to government. There are certain institutions that are there and are very good at what they do and are there year after year after year. And they are responsible for orchestrating what is probably the grandest deception of our generation.
Well, I'm looking forward to uploading that clip to YouTube. That was terrific, about 3 minutes. But what you didn't tell us was why. Why do you think, and none of us know the answer, but why do you think they did this? What was their central purpose? Was it just to pass new laws? Was it just to scare the people for the hell of it? What was the purpose of 9/11?
Our biggest belief system outside of religion is the money system. We all believe in this imaginary thing called currency. This is how we interact. This is how we build. This is how we exchange our hard work, our efforts for things, for influence. It's all in this one belief system. And the answer to almost every question in our money system, since we've got almost the whole world believing in money. So it's just a belief, because money is just a piece of paper. It's just digits on a computer, but it is a belief system. So we need everyone to believe in this system for it to work. We can't have half the population not believing in it. So every question, every answer to every question is money. It's always about money. You say, why did the company lay off these people? Why did the company do this? Why do the people that run our biggest companies and create the most influence in our government, why do they do it? It's for money. And yes, they have methods of creating money, but they also have to use the system that we all believe in to exchange money for goods. So in my mind, it's always been for accumulating more wealth, and with more wealth comes more influence. And your wealth and your influence can literally push people to behave in a certain way and create a society basically that you want. So if you want everyone working in one way to make some great shift in the way everyone thinks, then you need to use the money system to do it. And the only way you can get anyone's attention in this world is using the number one motivator of people, and that is fear. And fear is related to pain avoidance. We only have two things in this world that motivate us, and that is pursuit of pleasure and avoidance of pain. And avoidance of pain is far more powerful than pursuit of pleasure. Every one of us, we drive down on the right side of the road because we do not want to get hurt. If we decide to go across the yellow line, we know we're going to experience pain, so we avoid it. We don't need threats of fines. We don't need threats of incarceration or being shot. We're basically trying to preserve our own self. So we're trying to avoid the immediate pain, plus I guess all the punishment pains that are tacked onto it. So that is the main motivator of all human beings. So if we are in a constant state of fear, where we're always worried about what's going to happen tomorrow because we're in this state of permanent fear, which they call the war on terror, beautiful, very vague name, but it's instilled in all of us, it will make us do things that probably we ordinarily would not do. And that is these hoaxes, these huge events, these huge scare events, they're just simply used to keep our belief in the money system and to keep us going in a fashion that avoids pain. Whatever they tell us to do is going to avoid pain. We will do it.
Okay, but so if these people who run, I call them the people who run the show, the people who run the show, but you can call them the powers that be, you can call them the elite, you can call them whatever you like. It's fair to, you know, infer or presume that whoever was responsible for money prior to 9/11 were the same people who were responsible for money after 9/11. They already had that power. In fact, they were so powerful, they could pull off a fake terror event in the middle of New York and get away with it. So how did 9/11 help them in that sense, Ab? If they already had the power, how did 9/11 help them? I mean, if you say that the reason is money, well, they already controlled the money. They already controlled the Federal Reserve or any of these instruments or facilities they used to control the monetary system. So if they already had that power, how did 9/11 help them?
Well, you have to, I don't think you can send the world's largest army or military to a certain country without giving people a pretty damn good reason. Now,
Did they actually, I mean, is the war in Iraq real? Is the war in Afghanistan real?
I think that large numbers of United States troops moved into that region of the world. What they're doing there necessarily might not be exactly what we conceive as war, but I do believe that the world's largest logistical operation did and does move thousands of people that are basically occupying the majority of the countries in the world, and that is the goal, is to literally instill the Anglo-American system in every country of the world, mainly with psychological tools, but they're always backed up by the threat of force. And I do believe that the United States does have a base in almost every single country, even the ones that are so-called independent. So just the idea that they have that force, and not, whether they use it or not, I don't know, but they can easily say they're using it and portray it in the media, and that's all that is required.
So
it does not require any real
explanation. Is, oh, they had to do 9/11 to justify the war. And you're saying that you don't necessarily believe that it is a war the way that we're told on TV, but you do believe all of these American troops have gone to Iraq and Afghanistan and these kinds of things. But what are the American public going to do? Suppose you don't give them 9/11. Suppose you don't give them a justification for this big transfer of troops to the Middle East. What are the masses going to do anyway? Like, why do the people who run the show have to give the masses a fake excuse to move all of those people to the Middle East? It doesn't make sense to me, to be perfectly honest.
Well, they always have to have a reason for doing everything. They literally have to do their homework before they do something significant with our money or our fake money or whatever you want to describe it. So if I want to widen a sidewalk on the busiest street in Toronto, and most people say, no, you don't really have to do that. We don't really want that. We really like to drive our cars. We don't really want to slow it down. Well, if you believe in the elected system, which I somewhat do, then you need a damn good reason for opposing what everyone wants and doing it your way. And anyone who's been in a company and in a meeting knows it's very hard to get even two people to agree on anything, let alone when you're spending someone else's money. If it's my money, I can do whatever I want within the law. I could build a greenhouse in my backyard if I had the money, if I really wanted to, but I'd still have to get others to agree to it in the city. But the point is, if you want to get people to do things that they really don't want to do, you need a damn good reason. And 9/11 was their reason that they are expanding all around the world into some countries that do not want to be occupied. And that is their reason. Now, whether it's a good enough reason? Well, apparently it's a good enough reason for enough people. So enough people, at least if you believe in polling, are on board and say, okay, that seems like a good. Oh, we don't know what, you know, we don't know what country to go into, but let's just pick this one. I mean, literally, we have gun will travel and have good reason will invade. That was the flimsiest reason of all, but there was a significant reason. It always comes back to, well, 3,000 people were killed from outside, and that is our reason du jour. Or 10 people were killed in Toronto on a sidewalk, therefore that sidewalk is going to be widened, and it's going to be blocked off, and the road constricted. Because that is the reason, even though nobody wants it.
But the people, so, let's just say that there are military people going to the Middle East in this war on terror, regardless of what that war on terror is. Those people are paid. That's their job. So
yes.
They don't need to be given a justification. It is your job is to do what we say because you're in the military. So jump on this boat and off you go. Whereas what we're told, one of the main alternative conspiracy truth, the ACT realm stories about 9/11 is, they used this as a justification for the war on terror. They had to convince the masses that there was an excuse to start this war on terror. But what exactly are the masses going to do if they're not given that justification? Are they going to riot in the streets? Are they going to picket
the White House? Well, why chance finding out? Well, why chance finding out? And probably not. No, probably not. But again, if you just want to get enough of the people to be able to say, yeah, that's okay, and convince their friends, then that's all the justification they need. But no, I don't think anyone is going to organize, but why not just stage it and get people's win over what's called the hearts and minds of people, so you don't have any possibility, really, of any opposition at all. So why not just lubricate the machine and make it easy for yourself? If I can just make up a story, then get people to agree with me in every way of what I'm doing, that's much better than trying to push something through with people yelling and screaming at me. If all it takes is to create a Hollywood production,
well, why would anybody be yelling and screaming, though? I mean, you could just send these people to the Middle East and never even tell the masses. What difference would they know?
Well, they might not know, but at least you'd have a good excuse if they did find out what you were doing. And I don't think most Americans approve of using their military as an offensive force. But they use 9/11 as we all know, a pretty flimsy reason to just go ahead and occupy another country, destroy it, and rebuild it all with their money. And all with their companies.
So do you believe that Saddam Hussein was genuinely the leader of Iraq, that he was toppled by the U.S., as we're told on the telescreen?
I think the people of Iraq believed he was the leader of their country. They followed him. Most of them supported him. A very few, and I do believe the people that opposed him probably did disappear in some way, or it was propagandized that that's what happened if you opposed him. So whether he had total control or whether outside forces were using him as a puppet, it's hard to tell, but it's most likely what was happening.
So and you do believe that Iraq was genuinely invaded post 9/11?
I think the United States occupies Iraq fully now. I think there's a real green zone. I think there's a real number of Americans that are permanently in Baghdad, the green zone, and most likely will never leave in our lifetime. Yeah, I believe there are real bases all around the world with Americans in them.
Well,
yes,
that's a bit different to what I'm asking, though. So there are bases, there are American bases around the world. Okay, that's fine. I mean, we've had American bases.
Well, Baghdad, the green zone in Baghdad is a de facto base.
Okay, so there's been American bases, say, in Japan since World War II. So that's been the case for generations.
Yeah.
So if there are American bases in Iraq now, okay, but what I'm asking is, do you believe that there was a group of people running Iraq who were separate from the establishment, separate from the people who run the show, and post 9/11, the U.S. military went and toppled that regime? Is that your belief or understanding?
I think there was, I'm not exactly sure how they bring in and out leaders. I think most world leaders have to be co-opted, and they're easily co-opted by just forcing them to be in the money system, and therefore whoever's elected or selected is usually just someone who goes along with the worldwide money system. So they're really constrained if they choose to oppose that. I still think you could probably have a country that's independent, like the former Yugoslavia, like maybe Syria. I do think they can be run like mini corporations. They probably can be somewhat independent. But I do believe that if someone is not going along with the worldwide global plan, then you can easily orchestrate a propaganda coup first to get rid of them.
What about that footage, you know, that shock and awe operation where the Americans were dropping bombs on Baghdad, and we were showing the footage on CNN of all of these big explosions? Do you believe that was a real operation, that the Americans were really dropping bombs on Baghdad, and the footage that we were shown of this invasion, do you believe that was legitimate?
I do believe that when they go ahead and destroy an area, they probably evacuate it, give people advance warning to get out, and they probably do destroy large areas of cities with the intent.
Do you know the footage I'm talking about? The shock and awe footage of Baghdad that was shown? I think it was CNN who showed the footage.
Well, I probably watched it, but if you're talking about 1991, I think I probably watched it on CNN. And whether it was actually done at the time, the answer is probably no. Just like I've said earlier, that the 9/11 footage that was shown on the TV with the symbol live was probably created weeks, months, years in advance. So that was probably a crafted movie that was rolled at the time, at a real time, with all kinds of pre-planning like any other movie. So, yeah, there's no way I could know if they were actually destroying those buildings at the exact time that Shock and Awe was broadcast, I believe, in 1991. But nobody even would have thought to question that before they understood how the news actually works. News is entertainment, and news is pre-planned. News is fully coordinated.
This is what I find fascinating with this whole ACT realm, is that there are people who seem to be aware that the media can and does lie about anything, and that the masses will just go along with it. That's what the masses do. And yet there's this notion that 9/11 was used to justify the war in Iraq or the war in Afghanistan. But with a comprehensive understanding of media fakery, it seems pretty clear that we should understand that maybe the wars themselves are fake. So when we look at the footage from Shock and Awe, to me that looks like clearly fake footage. Or, at the very least, it is not evidence of a real war. And when we look at people like Saddam Hussein, this is a cartoon bad guy. He's a comic book bad guy. If you look at enough footage of him, he's almost as comical to me as Kim Jong-un from North Korea. These are the baddies that are put on our telescreens, just like in 1984, George Orwell's 1984. These are comic book bad guys. And take Iraq for one example. Iraq was supposedly created by the Imperial Powers after World War One. It was drawn up as part of that Sykes-Picot Act or something like this. So am I supposed to believe that? Am I supposed to believe that Iraq was created by the people who run the show, but somehow it fell out of their control, so they had to then go and create a fake war event in their own country, a fake terrorist event, to justify going and reclaiming Iraq from the boogeyman Saddam Hussein? Is that what I am supposed to believe?
Well, it may have gone in a direct, or the story Iraq may have outlasted the storyline. Maybe the storyline was to be closed, and maybe the next chapter had to be written, and the guy that they put in there had to go. Maybe there was enough dissent in the country that they were tired of the guy and they had to put in a new guy. So that's totally possible. So they've always got the next act already written, and they have probably different scenarios in case the population goes a slightly different way than the way they believe it should go. But they've got everyone bought and paid for, and everyone is part of the plan. So I'm sure that the actor playing Saddam Hussein was shown the lead or the gold, and he just took the gold. I'm sure he had a graceful exit, and he's probably relaxing somewhere in Europe, and his country is out of his control.
Well, I've got a lot more follow-up questions, but I need to pass over now to Waterman, Chris, and then to Mizzy. Right. Thank you to both of them for their patience. Chris, out there in
Florida. Are they still there?
I hope they are. Are you guys still with us?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're here.
Excellent. Guys, thanks for your patience. I could sit here and chat with Ab all day, but time is getting away from us. I want to give both of you guys a chance to ask some questions about Fakeologist.com, about 9/11, about anything that is related to all of this. So we'll go first to you there. Chris, any questions for Tim of Fakeologist.com?
Yeah, real quick, Tim. I know that you've given recently Simon Shack a lot of publicity or whatever. You've given him chance to speak about his Tychos, and you've offered to do a call, a Euroconvene, I think you called it, where you get on an audio chat with him. I know that you have great respect for him for September Clues, because he kind of, from your story earlier, opened up your eyes to all this media fakery. Is that basically where you're coming from with this the Tychos thing, and you're just, I know you said you're not really interested in it except for a deception point of view.
Yeah, you summarized that. You summarized my stance quite well. And Simon has my great respect. I'm not into idol worship in any way, but if I had to thank one or two people besides my own parents for explaining things in this world, Simon would definitely be up there. And not only has he explained the 9/11 deception, it's still held strong to this day. There's nothing that's knocked me off that, not even the very weak attempts to discredit Simon and any of his so-called nefarious background or affiliations. Nothing has swayed me in 6 years, and pretty sure nothing else will. And the other thing I admire about Simon, he has just a crystal clear way of taking and compacting a particular event and just putting it in a snarky and cynical and smart way, just to explain it easily without one reading every single detail. So therefore, I give Simon tremendous benefit of the doubt, like I would anybody else that I admired, with whatever he is about to explain to me. Now, I don't have an interest, as you said, other than the deception aspect, in the solar system or the shape of the Earth. I find it fascinating, again, like 9/11, that an entire world can believe in a certain belief without really questioning it. And there are no experts really questioning it that can possibly survive in this money system, because they know if you turn off the money, you turn off the ideas. It's as simple as that. It's a simple method of control, because we all have to eat unless we all have our own farms. So it's a very simple method of control. So therefore, if Simon wants to discuss his explanation for why Mars goes backwards, which, by the way, I didn't even know Mars went backwards, because I don't have any interest in the way the lights in the sky move. I really don't. I live in a city, and you can only see the sky, the stars in the sky, maybe 5 or 6 times a month, if you're lucky, when it's not cloudy and it's not light polluted. So I really don't have a great interest. So if Simon wants to explain his system, I'm most interested in it, because I'm more interested in how the people that actually care about astronomy react to Simon and actually go against a rabble-rouser or someone going against the grain. That's my greatest interest in it.
But speaking and of people going against the grain, I mean, Simon Shack has released his Tychos model, which is based on the work of a guy called Tycho Brahe, or Tycho Brahe, depending on how you pronounce that name. And I've made the point that I've looked into this Tycho character, and he seems to me to be another fictional character of history. I mean, what's your opinion on Simon Shack's response to what I had to say, basically Simon Schack has come out and said nasty things about me and accused me of nefarious intent for simply questioning the validity of this story of Tycho Brahe. Is Simon Schack displaying, in your opinion, and I understand that you respect the man and we're all thankful for September Clues, but do you think that Simon Schack is displaying a mature or professional attitude towards those who question his Tycos model?
Well, Simon has a much more confident and decisive and opinionated view on contrary opinion than I do. For instance, he chastises me for allowing more discussion than he would ever allow in a contrary forum on his forum. And I always err on the side of maybe letting people go on too long. That said, I don't really, it's not the way I approach contrary views because I'm just not as sure of my views as Simon is. So if Simon is so sure of his views that he can be dismissive of others, then that's fine. That's Simon. That's not how I act because I'm just not as decisive as he is on certain views. If you ask me my view of 9/11, I'm pretty darn confident of my view, and I will be very much more dismissive of contrary views. But when it comes to this one, I'm not sure if he's right or wrong, but if he's obviously so confident that he's dismissive of you and maybe a few other critics, then I really don't have a criticism of him other than that's just not the way that I could do it because I'm just not as confident.
Sure, but you're characterizing his response as dismissive, whereas you could characterize it as aggressive. I mean, he's aggressive. That's not being dismissive. That's being aggressive. And if you're confident in your opinions, why would you need to be aggressive towards those who are simply asking questions? I'm asking two main questions.
I don't know.
One, why do we believe this Tycho Brahe character is real? And two, why do we believe that the lights in the sky are solid physical objects? Now, these are very simple questions, Ab, and I'm not asking you to defend Simon Schack. The point I'm making is his response isn't to me dismissive, it's aggressive. Now, this is a man who is held in very high esteem in the media fakery circles, which is a small world. We're talking Hoaxbusters Call, we're talking Fakeologist.com, we're talking to some extent JohnLeBond.com. This is a very small area of the ACT realm. And within this realm, within this area, Simon Schack is held in high esteem. And here he is promoting his cosmological model, which is premised on Tycho Brahe being a real person and the lights in the sky being solid physical objects. And among a field of people who like to consider themselves skeptical, you've got me asking two very simple questions that are skeptical questions. Why do you believe Tycho Brahe was a real person? Why do you believe
Well, I don't know if he does. But my view on past historical figures is this. I think that a lot of artistic and scientific people are actually committees or conglomerates, and this goes for Mozart, Shakespeare, a lot of the scientific figures, a lot of the explorers of the past. I just recently learned that America was named after Amerigo Vespucci, who really his biggest claim to fame was he actually had better logs than Columbus, and those logs were taken and embellished by the top writers of northern Italy or whatever the Venetian area of the day. And because of the popularity and the promotion when Gutenberg was busy with his press and Mercator was busy creating the maps, Amerigo Vespucci, he got to name half the world with his name. But again, this is how maybe a real character has been embellished and mythologized, I suppose, for historical purposes. And just as we see 9/11 not being challenged today by any official source, so too will it go down as a myth. So I don't know what Simon's explanation of the lights in the sky, I don't know if it's related or should be linked to whether or not Tycho Brahe was a real character or he was just a person that they used as a front man for maybe the alternative cosmological community.
Can I ask you a simple question? Do you believe that anybody on Earth today can determine the mass of the moon with heavy balls in a shed?
No. No, I think your Cavendish decomposition or deconstruction is excellent, and I think it is absurd. I think the experiment is absurd on its face, prima facie.
I'm glad to hear that.
Absolutely.
You can see the problem here,
stupid,
though, because Simon Schacht's model is premised on that same notion that we can determine the mass of the objects in the sky. For some of us, people like myself, and it sounds like Waterman Chris has the same objection, we find it bizarre that a man as apparently intelligent as Simon Schacht and as skeptical as his followers claim to be, that they could even entertain for a moment this model, this Tycho's model, if it is premised on things like the Cavendish experiment. You can see, hopefully, Ab, not that I'm trying to get you to say anything critical of Simon Schacht necessarily, but hopefully you can at least see why some of us are scratching our heads here going, how can anyone take this seriously? Like, what is going on here?
Well, I hate to draw upon an ounce of salt and his model theory, but I suppose we can only propose a model, and until it is proven fallacious or a better model comes along, then we just use this as the template for our beliefs until it can be altered or removed completely. And that's, I think you need to talk directly to Simon to get his explanation, because I know you're, in legal terms, you're trying to lead the witness into an area where I would need to give every element more thought just to even understand how he bases his model on, say, a ridiculous, on the surface, Cavendish experiment.
Well, we only have 15 minutes left, guys, so I'll give Waterman Chris a chance to ask another question. Again, I apologize to both Chris and Mizzy. I feel like I've kind of hogged the questions here with Ab. But, Chris, another question for Ab, and then we'll go to Mizzy to do likewise.
No, this is just a quick follow-up, and it's not – I don't really expect an answer. It's kind of a rhetorical question. But don't you think it's strange that the way – that Simon hasn't said, hey, I think Tycho Brahe is real because of X, Y, and Z. Or I looked into his background, and I found – you know, X, Y, and Z that backs him up. Instead, he's just like, you know, oh, John LeCon or whatever. He just like name calls and dismisses. And to me, that's like when people resort to that, it automatically tells me they haven't even thought of it. It's not even so that it's more of a rhetorical question, but I hope to get to ask some questions directly of Simon when you have him on to discuss.
Well, I'd like to have him on. Yes. And get your questions ready, because it'd probably be better than my questions, because really, I put myself out there with my different views, and I can't always have a view or a logical explanation for my views on every single subject that comes up that's controversial or alternative. And therefore, if you have a question of Simon, it's best to ask it of him, and I can wonder the same way you do about why different people behave the way they do, but do I think it casts aspersion or makes Simon suspicious? I'll just say that for now, nothing Simon has done with regards to 9/11, my primary interest, it makes me suspicious of him or Hoy or maybe K-Ham at all.
Mm-hmm. I don't want this to go down the wrong way. I'm not suspicious of Simon. I don't think Simon Schacht's a paid show or anything like that. I just think he's wrong about this, and I don't think he's thought of it, and I think he put a lot of work into it before he realized. But instead of just saying, hey, guys, maybe I didn't think about these things, let me go back and look, he just is, like, so far down that he's kind of married to it. So I, just for the record, I don't think he's a shill or paid or a bad guy. I just think he's wrong.
Okay.
Well, let's go to Mezzi down there in Victoria. Mezzi, thanks for your patience. Any questions for Tim of Fakeologist.com?
Well, most of the questions have been answered, actually, during the conversation. Tim, you've got a wonderful attitude towards media fakery, and I love your explanation. It shows that you've done an enormous amount of work on the subject. And I could listen to you two guys talk all day as well, and that's it for me.
Thank you, Maz.
You're welcome.
We'll have to have you on the audio chat on fakeologist.com as well. It's free, and you're certainly welcome at any time. And I love female voices. I love females in general, but I really love female fakeologists because they're so rare. They're hard to find.
They are, aren't they?
Thank you. Why do you think that is as a female? Because I don't have a female perspective other than my own wife. But why? Yeah. And she's not really a fakeologist per se, although she tells me she's more skeptical than I am. And she even tells me I'm more fooled by mainstream than she is, which is shocking to me.
Right. I'm not really sure. Maybe it's the confidence. I think men seem to have the inbuilt confidence of speaking what they've learned. And with women, we can be a bit contradictory, I think. We jump around a bit, and I think that's what you said today was really interesting with the regard to you have a lot of thoughts about a lot of different subjects, and there's the one 9/11 that you're really good at. But I'm in the boat where I'm not really good at any of them. I just sort of float around. So I don't know a hell of a lot about any one particular subject. And it's hard to put my thoughts together because I float around, I think. I don't know if that's all women. It certainly is for me. And I get really nervous talking. So there you go.
Well, the more you do it, the better you'll be at it. And I have a wonderful co-host right now named Faye from Switzerland, and she speaks so many languages, and English is way down the list. And I think she is gaining confidence by just coming out every week to practice and speak her mind. And sometimes I think her views are more solid than mine. She's more confident in her views in many ways than I am in so many ways. So it's just practice, and if you got out there and you could collaborate with different females, if you like, on a more regular basis, and you'll just build up confidence. And if you're wrong, let people say you're wrong. I don't really have a problem with people criticizing me. I have a very thick skin. I'm not as offended by people saying rude things on my website, even to me. I can delete them if I want, but I think most people that disagree with a thought that they find abhorrent will just ignore it or maybe ridicule, but mostly ignore it. And I think it's okay to be wrong, and it's okay to not know. And we all should just feel free to talk about anything that isn't terribly offensive or hurtful to other people in a way where we could just be flexible and be malleable in our views.
That makes a nice little segue, because, guys, we have to start wrapping up the call. It's now 11 o'clock. But I wanted to say, Ab, I thought the way you handled that drama on your website recently with the whole Annette carry-on, and is this event real, is it fake, certain people claiming that the event was real because they knew people, and we don't have time to get into the specifics of what happened there, but I thought the way that you handled yourself and the way you conducted yourself was exemplary. And even though I might have come across as a little bit puzzled by some of your opinions on the call today, I hope that you do understand that your website was hugely beneficial for me a couple of years ago. And it's good to see that you're still doing what you do and putting the effort in. And it does come with criticisms. You can't run a website like your website or like my website without being attacked on a constant basis, including by people who will claim to be your own supporters. So huge props to you for the way that you've conducted yourself throughout all of those dramas. I want to give you a chance now to tell us a little bit about Fakeologist 55, which you did just touch on there, this show that you run with Faye. Tell us a little bit about Fakeologist 55, and then also tell us a little bit about, if you will, the calls that you had with BigLies.org with Ray West.
Ray West, Big Lies,
which is, if people say to me, what's the best call that Ab's ever done? Well, I haven't listened to all of your calls, but the ones with Ray West, for me, were huge. I still remember the first time I listened to your first call with Ray West. So tell us a little bit about Fakeologist 55 and also your calls with Ray West of BigLies.org.
Well, Fakeologist 55 is what I'm trying to make it a weekly show where I just touch upon briefly the different posts on Fakeologist.com and some of the topics that Faye, who's just an ordinary woman from Switzerland that came on the site. She became a supporter of the site financially, which is fantastic, and a great commentator. She has embarked with a person named Gaia on what we call Fakepedia, which is just a fakery Wikipedia that they put all the effort into. And, of course, like everything else, there's been conflict, but that's fine. So we just meet every week. We're going to try and meet tomorrow. I haven't even told her that I'm going to try and meet tomorrow in the middle of the day, a Euroconvene, where I interrupt the middle of my day for her evening. And we try and just discuss in a just a casual way for 55 minutes, which is 27 minutes in the morning and 27 minutes in the afternoon, the average North America commute, where you people can easily just digest and just maybe hear a topic or two that they're somewhat interested in that's fakeology-based. And it's just an easygoing conversation just to get all the people that do not read the website or cannot read the comments or cannot read the forums, all the different aspects of the website, just to give them a little bit of information on what is happening for the week and get them to the website, maybe get them to participate. So it's just a, hi, we're here. This is an audio format of what you could be reading if you're not. And I'm trying to make it regular just to attract an audience. Now, regarding Ray West, Ray was most interesting to me because he took over the Nuke Lies website that Jesse Waugh originally started. And the nuclear lie, the nuclear hoax, to me, is one of the biggest hoaxes of our generation. I think it goes right down to nuclear science. I don't have lots of proof, but just gathering the different voices on science hoaxery and science fakery, I'm quite convinced that the whole idea, right down to the atom, there are super big flaws in it. And it's really hard to argue because we're dealing with things we can't actually sense with any of our senses. So therefore, we can't even sense something. So to me, it's just science fiction. So I brought Ray West on mainly because I wanted to talk about nuclear hoaxery, and he had taken over the forum. My only issue with Ray is he constantly falls for what I think is the Jewish psyop. He is one of these people that blames everything on the Jews. They are the ones controlling the world. They are the ones that do everything wrong. And I think I think that is also taking a minority and making them the scapegoat for something where they're just part of the bigger picture of control, and they're as used as any other group, just like the Muslims are used as the terror boogeymen for the last 10 or 20 years. And moving forward, the Jews have always been used as a scapegoat. And because he is constantly falling for that, what I think is a hoax, and interlacing his invective in almost every single sentence, it makes it really difficult for anyone who listens to concentrate on what I'm trying to say and discuss the nuclear hoax, how nuclear power is most likely a worldwide global scam, how nuclear weapons are most likely a phony weapon that can split the earth in half. And I think he totally, and I didn't even realize this till we talked to Jesse Waugh, thanks to Rollo, that Ray somewhat hijacked Jesse Waugh's forum, so much so that Jesse Waugh decided to leave his own forum and try and close it down. And Ray just took a snapshot of the forum and then tried to build on that snapshot. So I didn't even know that little conflict. So Jesse Waugh, I think, was feeling and reacting negatively to the same things that I was. But nevertheless, there are very few people that talk about the nuclear hoax, and that's why I had him on once or twice, but again, he's just too angry and too eager to blame what I think is the wrong target. But it is the target put before all of us, and the Jews are just constantly being used as the convenient scapegoat, and it's a trap that many people fall into. And what that does is completely blackwashes all the research into fakery by creating an attack on a group that has been quite well protected and willing to, and the mechanisms are in place to trap people that fall into the trap, and then it shuts the whole operation down. So it's a pretty complicated trap, and he's fallen into it completely. And that's why it's difficult to talk to him.
Well, let me say, all of his perceived flaws, I think Ray West's work on the nuke hoax is sensational. And it's a little bit disappointing that your reflections on those calls is somewhat negative, because for me, I can tell you, a couple of years ago listening to that first call, because what he did was Ray West took the call and then added like a visual component and uploaded it as a video. So he's got like a 2 or 3 hour video where it's you and him discussing the nuke hoax, and then he basically follows the different links on his forum so you can see where those where that information is. And so for me, like I said, I still remember where I was when I was watching that video, and this was still relatively early in my journey, if you want to call it that. And it was hugely beneficial for me to hear someone who was eloquent and well-spoken, even if a little bit, like you say, a little bit too focused on the Jews. At least when it comes to the nuke aspect, he knew what he was talking about and could speak well. And for me, that was a big stepping stone. So what I'll do in the show notes for this call is I'll link to your chats with Ray West. I'll also link to your chat with Waterman Chris, because unfortunately, mostly my fault, we haven't heard much from Waterman Chris today. So I'll post the link to your chat with Waterman Chris on Fakeologist from April. I think it was April 3rd or April 7th or something like this, so a couple of months ago. So people can listen to that call as well. And I'll also put a link to your latest episode of Fakeologist 55. But we have to wrap this call up, so we'll have a quick after call once I finish recording, for those of you who stick around. But just quickly, Ab, do you want to give us your final thoughts for member Skype call number 22?
Well, I thank you very much for the invitation. I don't get invited on too many shows, mostly because I'm busy blabbing on the audio chat or the Fakeologist, but I think John LeBon is definitely one of the best finds in Fakeology in website and audio form and on YouTube as well. I think you've done a great job. You're every now and then one or two people a year come along that are really eloquent and speak clearly and well, and I think you are definitely one of the top broadcasters and promoters of my website, for sure. So I definitely thank you for that, and I wish you continued success in all your research, including the dinosaur thing, which I think is a big one and should be a companion piece to all school children who are learning about this mythological creature of this era.
Fantastic. Well, Ab, I know it's late where you are, so it's up to you whether you stick around for the after call or not, but let me thank you once again for appearing on the show, and hopefully we can do this again soon. Let me go to Waterman, Chris, and then to Mizzy to get their final thoughts for member Skype call number 22. Waterman, Chris, I do apologize. We didn't hear much from you today, but any final thoughts for the call?
No, I think you did a great job. I would have, you know, the conversation went in the direction that I was hoping for it to go, so I thought it was great.
Excellent, mate. We'll just stick around for the after call. There's a couple of things to discuss very quickly. And then also, Mizzy down there in Victoria, final thoughts for MSC22.
Oh, well, just an absolute pleasure to listen to Tim. I actually haven't heard his voice a lot, but he's got a really nice voice, obviously suited for radio.
Ooh, thank you.
And I can't wait to listen to this back. There was so much information that was put through here. I just really am amazed every time at how much information there is. And listening back, you always go, oh, yeah, I remember listening to that. That is so interesting. So thank you, Ab.
Oh, thank you. And I'll bow out because I've done enough blabbing. I can go on for a long time. And John was good to interrupt me, because sometimes I get pontificating and it just goes on too long. So, John, you're a great host, a great find, and you have a great mind and a great website. And I encourage people, and I do post many of your videos or your teasers on my website, fakeologist.com, and I do believe that you are doing a good job. But I'll sign off so your members can do a post-mortem on this call without one more interjection.
Thanks again for the contributions, Ab, and I'm sure we'll speak again behind the scenes sooner rather than later. And before I wrap up the recorded call, let me just thank the supporters of johnlebon.com. Very quickly, Alistair Kane, Adrian C, Alphrex Omega, Archer, BM Seattle, Big Dave, Chad628, Chinless Wonder, Chris Law, CM, Curryman11, DB User, Dante from New York, DJMo1987, DNA, French Bulldab, Fung, Hando, Harry L, H Dog, Jack R, Jimmy Scala, JPC, Clink39, Nightly News, Lee Lee, Local Chump, Marty Pants, Mass, Mizzy was part of the call today, Mongo, M. Rakowski, Nate M, Notosphere, Negan Tropic, Pedro Jose, PJG, Pono Koo, Rebel, Rico, Stanson, The Prophet 49, They Are Laughing at Us, Tyke Limited, Todd P, Tom Foolery, Truth 34, Truth Grasshopper, Vela Set, Vinny 777, Waterman Chris, who was part of the call today. Thanks again, Waterman Chris. What's up, sport? Who knows? And our latest member to join us is Spiro, who some of you will have seen in the comment sections on YouTube. So those are the people who are making these calls possible. Thanks to each and every single one of them. If you want to know more about johnlebon.com, just head along to the website, and lots of information there. Lots of information about fake nukes, fake dinosaurs, fake 9/11, fakeologist.com, you name it, it's there. But we've got to wrap it up for today. So on the 10th of June, 2018, member Skype call number 22. And until next time, you guys, take care of yourselves.
And support independent media. You can clip that if you want. But good job, John.
No, I'm going to leave that in there, mate. I'm going to leave it in. Hey, thanks a lot for being part of the call, dude.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.